Hello and welcome to From the Rookery End, a podcast all about a life following Watford Football Club. And many Hornets made the trip, the short-ish trip up the M1 to Leicester yesterday to see the 2-0 defeat. You might be expecting us to do a Heide Helgerson special sort of focus podcast. That's been delayed slightly because we've been trying to speak to a few people about Heide. One of them is Sir Nigel Gibbs, and you'll hear from him a bit later on the podcast. But Colin was there, and Colin made the trip up to Leicester. So let's have a chat with Colin to find out about how, well, what he saw and what he thinks that means for Watford in this continued season and continued story that we have as Watford fans. So, Colin, a trip up to Leicester. I used to go there quite a lot. I went to the University of Loughborough. It's one of the original new stadiums, isn't it? The Walker Bowl, I think it was originally called. What was it like though when you're on your way up there? How are you feeling? Optimistic?
I was feeling optimistic, John. I don't know why. I mean, one should never feel optimistic on a train going to watch Watford away from home. Not in the last year, anyway. But I did sort of feel that after six games unbeaten, that there was a level of organisation that would be needed against a team that was top of the league and had won 12, I think, out of 14 games, or 13 out of 15. But I travelled up, interestingly, with my friend Tom, who is Lily's best mate's dad, who lives on the same street as me, and he's absolutely mental Leicester fan. And so I got quite a lot of good insight about Leicester. They've got a new manager, and he's come up with something that he calls the idea. And the whole club has to adhere to the idea. And the idea is basically a very sort of, it's a version of Pep Guardiola football, which is we keep the ball, and he said Leicester fans are getting irritated because they don't do much with it. They've got a lot of pace in the side, but they progress very slowly. He said, but then, you know, sometimes we can counter very quickly. So I was like, okay, that sounds interesting. And he said, but you'll be bored. It'll be very boring. And I was like, well, I'm used to that, so it's fine. And and we got up there, and the atmosphere in the ground was kind of a little bit subdued. I know that Leicester have been used to winning the Premier League and going deep into the FA Cup and playing in the Premier League, and now they're in the Championship. They obviously don't think they're going to be in it for long, but it wasn't the raucous place that it has been. They've taken the clappers away, which may be the reason. Also, you go talk about being one of the new modern grounds. It is starting to look a little bit shabby. As my friend said,
I reckon it's 20 plus years old, isn't it?
Yeah, and it hasn't had much done to it, and it's a little bit kind of being, it's a bit sort of plasters on over cracks rather than wallpapering over cracks rather than sort of a full renovation. But it was looking a bit shabby. But the Leicester fans, as always, very friendly, very welcoming. It's a great place to go. I absolutely love going there. That and Carrow Road are my two faves for away days. And so then the game starts, John.
Yeah, you know, this is the one I want to pick your brains about, because I didn't watch it. I listened to it. There's that feeling I've got. I don't know if you felt the same about the away games recently, even though we did win one. Overly cautious and completely set up to not lose, it feels like. Because we don't feel like we're a team that necessarily has, like you say about the Leicester thing, hold the ball, control the ball, hit them on the break. I don't think we've necessarily got the setup to do that and then hit them on the break. So it really feels really cautious. Did you get similar vibes, or have we seen an evolution?
Not really. I wouldn't say that they were overly cautious. Remember, they're playing the team top of the league and we're away from home. So obviously that's considered one of the toughest games of the season. So what developed was a clear understanding of what the idea is, because their keeper in the first half, their keeper had more touches of the ball than any other Leicester player. So that should tell you something. Now, and I'm not joking, that is actually what happened. He probably had the ball for longer than any other player as well. So what they were trying to do was a sort of chess game, was they were desperately trying to draw us out. Now, I spoke to my friend Tom, and I said, how did you get beat if, you know, you won 12, 13 in a row, and then you got a lot? He said, well, the reason we got beat was because Leicester and Middlesbrough had the cojones, if you like, to really press us in our own half, and we panicked, and that's why we lost. Now, that's Leeds and Middlesbrough, and it's not Watford. And so we were very cautious about pressing. We kept our shape, and they had the ball. But they didn't. They had the ball for 65%, I think, of the game. So not, I mean, it does sound huge, but he said there's been games where they've had over 80% of possession. So we didn't let them have it all their own way, but we kept our shape. And what really struck me in the first half, and I agree with you, he has been cautious away from home. He does like, a bit like Javi Gracia, he likes to get to half-time nil all, if he can, and turn it into a 45-minute game with players tiring and so on, and bring on substitutions. And frankly, we almost pulled that off in some ways, going to the second half later. But what happened was that we held our shape and our position, players covered for each other. And occasionally when we pressed, or someone like Jamal Lewis moves up the pitch to try and press someone, gets caught out when they, and then the ball comes in behind them, then there were people covering his position and he would get back into position. So there, it was like a chess game, and it wasn't massively entertaining, but it was kind of intriguing, like who's going to blink first. The player that really stood out as not doing anything of much value was our Moroccan player. He seems, on the ball, he was too tricksy, trying to do too many sort of impossible things. And then when he didn't have the ball, he just didn't look like he knew what his job was. So on the way home, my friend Tom said, he said, "It's interesting, you look like a proper football team. It's like, I can see that the coach has got every player, everyone knows what their job is." And I thought, that is true. Livermore kind of directing traffic, Kayembe hunting for the ball. But the obvious example of someone who just looked a bit lost in the game. It wasn't like he was lazy, wandering around going, "Well, I don't really do off the ball, I only do on the ball." He just didn't know where to be or how to close down space. It's like, maybe that's just not part of his game. Maybe he can't do it. I don't know. But he really stood out as a kind of the player that wasn't quite at the races in the way that everyone else was. Apart from that, Porteous, Hoot, Backman, we held the shape. We stopped them getting into really dangerous positions. And we got to halftime nil all.
So here you go. So out of the players who were there, who woke up, bound out of bed, went down the stairs and watched the highlights again? Who woke up with the fear of God in them? And who is knocking on Ismail's door asking for more game time after the Leicester defeat? So who do you think bound downstairs to watch the highlights?
Well, it certainly wasn't Rajovic, because in the first half he had a ball, and my friend was sitting right behind that goal at the other end of the pitch, and he had basically a side foot open goal, and he fluffed it.
Would that make a difference?
To go 1-0 up, yeah, I think it would have made a difference. It would have certainly given us more confidence, more concentration, more effort to stop them getting in. They did get in on a few occasions in the first half. They do move the ball quickly when they want to, but they also, every time a player is approached with the who has the ball, they will turn around and pass it backwards. So we were able to keep them pretty much most of the time around the halfway line or back at their keeper. As I say, had more touches than any other Leicester player in the first half. But occasionally they broke through, but we were able to cover ourselves. So which player is going to come running down the stairs? Probably Porteous, because he went in goal.
Look, I went in goal.
I'm in the goalie's shirt. I don't know that any of them would. Kayembe might. Might say, I want to go back. I want to look at what I did. He worked incredibly hard. He played in his usual number eight position with Livermore behind him. Livermore went off after 60 minutes and he ran over. I thought, oh, they're taking Kayembe off. That doesn't sound, maybe he was looking pretty tired. And I think it was mental tiredness, the concentration level in the Watford side. You could almost feel it from the stands, how hard they were having to concentrate, how they were having to watch and stay alert and cover players. And you know, they do move, they play nicely, Leicester, when they want to, but they, and they interchange positions. So they had to be really on top of their game. So Kayembe might go back and look at the whole game and say, I did work hard yesterday. That's why I'm feeling so tired. And what could I have done better? And then he drops into the six role when Livermore goes off, and he could maybe analyse how he played in that position in the last 30 minutes. Again, he just seems to be a player growing in confidence. And so he may be the one. What was the second question?
Who woke up with the fear of God in them? Loser?
Well, I think probably, yeah, maybe loser.
Or do you think losers waking up, knocking on Ismaila's door asking for more game time?
Loser?
Yeah.
Well, he can do that if he wants, but he's not going to get it. Okay. That's my view. Ooh. Because in the second half, when he brought on Chakvetadze, I mean, he is a dynamo. Now, maybe you don't want that in the first half when you're trying to contain a team that's as good as Leicester. You want someone with a bit more calmness. But from an attacking point of view, and if you're going to play loser up there, you know, in the 8/10 role, then you want someone who's going to be direct. Chakvetadze gets the ball. He wants the ball all the time, and is, just gets it down and runs straight forward and puts a bit of panic into the Leicester side. And the more obvious person to replace loser will be Kone. And I'd be very surprised if Kone doesn't start instead of loser on Tuesday, because he'd obviously had to go to, I think he went to North America in the international break. Yeah. So he'd had long haul flights. And you know, Ismail is good. We've got no injuries. And why is that, you might ask? Is that because training methods have changed? Is it because he won't push a player past 65 minutes if he doesn't think he's got those extra minutes in him and is in danger of picking up an injury. But I thought Luza played because Kone had been away and maybe had longer flights. And so, but when he came on, Kone is just another player, just wants the ball. Give me the ball, give me the ball. He's more dynamic than Luza. Luza just looks very lost in this team at the moment. Mm. So he may be knocking on the door, but I suspect...
no one's answering.
No one, yeah, Val's like, yeah, come back later. So I would say knocking on the door is not Luza. It's more likely to be Kone saying, I am starting on Tuesday, aren't I, Gaffer? Or Chatfataze saying, can you give me a bit more time? Because I really feel like I'm ready to have a real impact on the team. He's getting 30 minutes here, 20 minutes there. Sometimes he doesn't come on. But again, it's just that dynamism. And we did lack that. And I've looked on Facebook this morning, and one of my friends is saying, I'm really proud of the boys. They stuck at it, and it was a good performance. And a few weeks ago, that team would have probably taken us to pieces, which I agree with. Right. But then there was another guy called Dave who was saying he was really disappointed that we didn't attack them more, that we didn't put them under more pressure. And it was only after they scored that we really started to have a go at them. And when we did that, they didn't look... as comfortable. Which brings me on to that, my final point really about the second half, which was that when the goal went in, and it was it's unlucky, Vardy comes on, they all start singing the Vardy song, which just like, don't sing that song, you know he thrives on that sort of thing.
Exactly.
Don't give him a reason to score against us, he always scores against us. Anyway, it's a shot comes in, Backman makes a decent save, and it drops down and Vardy pops in the rebound. There was no one marking him. But then that's his cleverness, isn't it? He may not be the player he was 5 years ago, but he's still very, very clever, fox in the box, all of that. But after that, I thought, oh, I bet the heads go down now. They've worked so hard. We're 1-0 down. You know, I felt my head go down standing in the stand, like, oh, all that effort and it's gone. But not a bit of it. They came out, they stuck together, they tried to harry and push. He brought on Asprilla, he brought on Bayo, who was a real nuisance. He pressed the goalkeeper, you know, he was running around. And there was, we had a couple of half-decent chances to get an equaliser. Porteous had one, I think, and, you know, we were getting at them. They were looking also quite tired. I think they thought job done, Watford will, you know, will stop. You know, they'll go, okay, we've lost, but we've played well. But no, and we really went right all the way to the end. And then there was a silly penalty, which slightly, I felt, kind of tilted the result in Leicester's favour. But I think 1-0 would probably have been a better result. Now, interestingly, the sending off, no one saw, except for me, I think, the first booking. Is a terrible foul on Hoot, I think it was. I was on the other side, so I couldn't see who was doing the fouling and who was fouling. It was very late and very high, and it put Hoot right into the barriers. And all of the Watford fans went up like, that's a red card. That's got to, you know, it was really aggressive, very high. The ref, who I have to say had a bit of a shocker, he sort of was calming everyone down. Like, normally in a situation like that, ref runs over and books the Leicester player straight away, and that calms everyone down. Do you know what I mean? When they go, right, that's a booking, bang, there you go, you're booked. Now get out of my, you know, I don't want to see you. But he's trying to calm all the Watford players down. So Backman, who is the captain after all, he comes out of the goal, and I thought captains were allowed to talk to refs. Now, he may have said something untoward, but he got booked. He got booked for dissent.
Exactly. So... the second yellow card that got him sent off with a penalty.
Yeah, it was for a trip on...
And that's life as goalkeeper. But that made that incident is worse because he got his yet another yellow card for dissent. Yeah. Now, dissent isn't talking to the referee as a captain.
No, of course.
Dissent
is shouting at the referee.
Is bad behaviour.
Yeah, saying that's a bad decision. It's got to be a red card. Why haven't you sent him
off? And he's so aggressive, isn't he? You know, he's not in a... you know, a demanding way. He is literally shouting in his face, and he does it constantly. And he just sees he needs to stop this red mist because
he shouldn't be the captain.
Well, I mean, that's the year, who else would you have given it to? I don't know. No, you wouldn't at the beginning of the year because he didn't play.
Now,
I think it's an easy.
Goalkeepers as captains is wrong anyway. They've got to walk miles to talk to the referee. It doesn't make any sense. But and also. You know, They're mental. As everyone knows, all goalkeepers are mad. So don't give that opportunity to talk to the ref, to the bloke who's going to, you know, lose his temper. Because as you say, he'll get booked.
And like Livermore, you know the way he speaks to the Watford players, and especially the younger ones, he has that sort of calming, you know, way. But even when he's playing, he's not that. And you know that if he was speaking to the referee, when in the middle, nearer him, then I know Mike always obsesses about the completely talking in the ear that Troy did constantly. I don't think he'll do that. But he will talk to him as a professional. And,
he has an air of authority on the pitch. Yeah. And he's also got a lot of experience. So referees will naturally respect him. They'll know he's not a head case or, you know, a hothead. And so he seems the obvious choice to me, but because he plays that anchor role in midfield as well, he's in the perfect position to be captain. He played really well yesterday. I was a bit surprised he went off when he did. I think it was 60, 65. But maybe, again, it's just a fitness thing. It's like, we know that you're getting into the red zone after 65 minutes of playing against a team that keeps the ball. So you're constantly moving, constantly running, constantly changing your position, constantly trying to help the other midfielders be in the right place. Maybe after 65 minutes, you're just tired, and we need fresh legs. And we really did need fresh legs in midfield at that point. Sadly, we then conceded not long afterwards. But those fresh legs did really help us in the last part of the game.
The you mentioned a little bit earlier, Rajovic just being Rajovic, missed the chance, of course, which would have made a difference, I suppose. Do you feel he had the right sort of service? Was he sort of continuing to play that role that we know he can play, and then he does play it, he does well. I mean, him and Sema, the new little partnership we're excited about. But with Ince, does that do anything?
No. Sema had a couple of occasions where he could have actually crossed the ball with Rajovic in, you know, on the penalty spot, but the defenders were too cute for Sema and they managed to block it or deflect it. So that was unfortunate, because he did get into a couple of good positions down that left-hand side in the first half particularly. But the truth of the matter is, how can I put this nicely?
No, that noise is perfect.
He can't hold the ball up, and that's really the problem. So when you're playing against a team like Leicester, you need an out ball and you need someone that can hold it so that we can keep possession for a bit. And he just can't do it. He can't even win a header. He doesn't even seem to win a header. As soon as he's outside the box, he looks like a foal that's just been born. And inside the box, he's okay. And he's a big lump and he can get his head on it and he can get his foot on it. We've seen tap-ins and head-ins. But he's got nothing else to his game. He's just... And he's not quick. I don't really know. I mean, it's the obvious area of weakness. Val has got our team into a good shape. He's got 15 or 16 players that he clearly trusts. No Deli Bashiri, by the way. But he's got, you know, he's got Ince and Esprit. He's got Sema and Martins. He's got players that he trusts. We've got Cech Fatadzi, Kone, Kiembe, Livermore. It's quite a good, you know, group of players to pick from. We're just so lacking in a striker, in someone that can really hold the ball up, that can scare defences, that they go, Jesus, we're playing so-and-so today, we're going to have to be on our toes because he's really fast and he's really good on the ball. We haven't got that player, and of course lots of teams don't have that player because they get paid an awful lot of money and they cost a lot of money to bring in, but we need to unearth someone. There was a lot of people saying, why isn't Healy coming on? Why have they brought Bayo on? You know, because Bayo has his flaws as well, but against a team like Leicester, Rajovic looked really... He didn't really have any impact on the game, except his one moment which he missed. And you know, that if he'd had four or five chances and got one, you go, well, okay, he scored and he got us back in the game or whatever. But he only in games like that, you don't get many chances, and you've got to take them. And he didn't. And he looked very out of his depth at times. You know, high balls to him, he wasn't getting under them. He wasn't holding the ball up. He was giving the ball away. His first touch was very heavy, and Leicester were very good at winning the ball back. Indeed, he played for them, and you know he's a classy Premier League central midfielder. So he didn't really get any change out of that Leicester midfield. All the centre backs, he looked woeful, to be honest with you. I don't like to criticise players or dig them out, because I don't know if they listen to the podcast. It's not very nice to have people say horrible things about you, but he was woeful yesterday.
At the other two areas to talk about, the full backs, wing backs, Ryan Andrews, but particularly Lewis. Did he have a performance? Do they both have performances that you want, that you think good? You're still on the right track.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. I mean, they both had a lot of defensive work to do, so they weren't bombing forward. But Jamal Lewis got forward quite a bit, and he had Sema ahead of him. That's quite an interesting partnership that's developing. And also Sema, as I said, when he got forward and got out of position, someone would come back and get into that left back position to help out. But he's starting to look so much more confident than he did a month and a half ago. He is good on the ball, and he's got good vision, and he is quite quick as well. He's got some pace about him. So he looks like he's developing into somebody that we can rely on, and all that Val can rely on, and certainly he's got no doubts about picking him. I would say it's not like he's thinking, oh, maybe I should, you know, change it up, put Sema there, bring Martins on. And on the other side of the pitch, Andrews, you know, he's just signed a new contract and Gakia is out for a couple of months. He's going to have to rely on him, I think, because I don't know what other options we've got. But Andrews is a very calm and collected player. And unfortunately, he wasn't able to help Tom Ince. Tom Ince had a poor game. He was the only other one. And it wasn't because he wasn't trying. He was just finding himself in cul-de-sacs all the time and he wasn't able to get free of the Leicester players. They obviously had targeted Tom Ince a little bit. They knew that he was a threat and they kind of managed to mark him out of the game. But yeah, the fullbacks are looking good. The whole back line is looking so much better organised and tougher to break down. We're not making those stupid... I mean, we did give the ball away. Batman passed it straight to one of the Leicester players. So did Porteous, I think, at one point, or maybe it was Hoot. But we're cutting out those stupid errors that we were making 6 weeks ago in the back, in the defensive department. We're starting to cut those errors out and play more sensibly. And so, yeah, I think they're young lads, but they're doing well.
One of the, we mentioned Ryan Andrews there. You know, he's been away with the under 20s for England. He played the home game they played, I think, Doncaster. He got like a little bit at the end, but he played the full 90 minutes when they played away in Germany. So some great experience for him. And actually, I think some of you might be expecting us to talk about Heide Helgason in this podcast, as we have done. But unfortunately, we're hopefully speak to some other people. But one in particular we spoke to this weekend on Friday night was Sir Nigel Gibbs, and we had to ask him a little bit about young players because the role he plays at Tottenham at the moment, particularly with Ryan Andrews. So this is what he had to say.
It's great, isn't it? Because that's what supporters want. They want a homegrown player in the team. They want as many as they can get. And I think you get an affiliation with the fans if you are that homegrown player. And I mean, he's done very well. I mean, Watford in recent years, they haven't had that many come through, have they? So, you know, for him to sort of start becoming a regular is fantastic and shows how well he's done because... You know, they have been a buying club recently, Watford, haven't they? They haven't really had many come through, as I said. And, you know, I'm really pleased. And obviously the connection with his dad, it makes it even more special, doesn't it? You know, obviously I played with Wayne and know about his history. But, yeah, it's great. It really is.
You said Watford are a buying club, Nigel. Is there an excuse for that? I get where they're coming from to a degree. You land in the Premier League. It does seem to me that we have struggled to bring players through. Sometimes in Watford's recent history, perhaps when Sean Dyche was there and Malky were there, we were having to bring players through a lot earlier than perhaps was appropriate. And not many of those guys have gone on to have stellar careers. If we're honest, they've had good careers, some of them, but not many have gone on to higher things. How difficult is it for, I know you're at Tottenham, much more resource there and much more, it's more attractive as well, of course, as Watford, but how difficult actually is it for Watford to bring players through?
I think there's a shift now because the good thing about it, you've got Richard Johnson and Jimmy Gilligan who know the club very well. They know what the requirement is, the standard is. But also I think it's, when you're a Premier League club, and I include Watford in that, when they were Premier League, it's very difficult to come through. You have to be good. Yeah. To play in the Premier League, you have to be very good. So it's not going to be easy for any player to come through. And also, you have to win. It's really difficult. So the same scenario at Tottenham, even at that level, you have to be really, really good to get into Tottenham's first team because they've got a team full of internationals and a squad full of internationals. So the internationals not even getting in the team. So you have to be really, really good. And the same applies to Watford. You know, as much as we want them to come through, you certainly have to have a good games programme. You have to have a real, you know, philosophy of how you want to develop players. And I feel, you know, ever since Richard and Jimmy have gone in there, that they've actually got that and it's a clear method of working. They've got a pathway now. And it's good that the manager has trusted the player, which is the most important thing. But also, Ryan has to be good enough. You know, he's not going to be put in there on sentiment. He has to perform. And that's the most important thing. So I just feel that, at the moment, it's really good for Watford if they can produce maybe one or two players, because obviously that saves having to go out and buy a player if he can come in and do the job. But as I said, in the Premier League, you have to be really, really good. You do, because the standard of the Premier League is so high.
And he's been doing England under 20s. Do you think that is that experience of going to St George's Park, is that? Do you think that is a good thing, I suppose, for him in many ways? But what benefit is that normally to boys that you've seen go to play for one of the England under teams?
Yeah, it's good recognition because of your performances and where you are. But you don't get picked out of sentiment. So You know, he's been playing well. He's been selected. I mean, they will have competitive games as well as friendlies, but it's only going to help him, you know, go and see the standard of the other players in the squad. Other players will be up, you know, maybe slightly bigger clubs, so to speak. So it's only going to enhance him. Also, a different exposure to the matches. So you're going to play against international teams who have different styles of play, different quality of players, and so it can only be beneficial to him. And he's done really well. He's done really well, and long may it continue.
We're the Orns. You're the Orns.
Come on, you Orns!
So let's leave the Leicester game alone, and we'll move on because hey, there's another game on Tuesday. But Colin, there's a new series of Hornet Heaven has just started.
I know. Oliver Wickham won't stop writing them.
He won't, and you keep reading them. So it's your fault, you keep reading them.
I know. I can't say no, they're so glorious.
Yeah, they are wonderful and educational in a historical way. There's going to be a new episode out every Friday until Christmas. The first story is a twist on the famous movie, the Kevin Costner movie, Field of Dreams, and features Watford's greatest ever forward, Cliff Holton. Here's a clip from the opening scene.
It's the same shape as a goal, but half size. The two posts are black and the bar across the top is yellow. Some people call it a crush barrier. Others call it a leaner. Either way, it came from Vicarage Road and has been propped up against his garage wall since he and Fiona retired to Devon 10 years ago. They're both staring at it. Fiona says, "We can't keep it forever. We need the space. What do you want to do with it?" "I've got an idea, but you won't like it." He acquired the Lena when the Vicarage Road terrace was demolished. Its last game was in May 1993. The home game against Oxford was also Steve Perryman's last game as manager, but as far as David knows, no Watford fan has kept Steve Perryman stored away in a garage as a memento. The Lena holds all kind of memories for him, all the way back to when he first started watching Watford as a six-year-old boy in 1959 and fell in love with Cliff Holton. "Go on then. What's the idea?" "Well, we've never known what to do with the field behind the summer house. Do you remember that movie we watched again the other night? If you build it, he will come. That one. I could cut the grass, mark out a pitch, put up goalposts and nets, maybe build up some banking and throw up a couple of old wooden stands. A kind of mini Vic, the way it was. I'd stand against the leaner behind the goal." He glances at Fiona to see her reaction. For nearly 50 years of marriage, his Watford memorabilia has spread from room to room of their home like an infestation. She has suffered it with an affectionate world weariness and a loving disdain, and he's grateful. She kisses him on the cheek and says, "If you build it, I will leave."
So, Colin, but also you of course are, and we haven't spoken to you on the podcast about it. You read the Enjoy the Game. How was that for you, reading Lionel's book and turning it into a podcast?
Well, there was a few tears. I mean, there was so much nostalgia for someone my age in that book. It took me all the way through those years. I can remember being at school and someone saying Elton John has taken over at Watford, and I was like, "What?" And then they said, "We've got a new manager. He's called Graham Taylor." And then we hit the bottom of the leagues. And then it all began. The magic began. You know, we started to climb, and getting on the school bus in the morning to go to Ricky Comp, which is where I went to secondary school, and more kids were, suddenly Watford scarves were appearing on the coach. People were wearing them to school. People were you know, walking around school with the scarves tied to their wrists on match days and bunking off to go and get the coach to away games. Shh, don't tell Mum. It was like a surreal experience as each season passed and we got better and better. And so reading it and listening, I mean, it's very educational as well, because it is a real peek behind the curtain, listening to the players talk about their time, their experience. And of course, it's very focused on Graham, the gaffer, the boss, sir, as I'm sure we would all call him if we met him. I mean, I met him once at Lourdes. I went with my wife to Lourdes because her father used to work there as a doctor. And we went in to have our lunch, and then Graham Taylor was there. It was just after he'd come back the second time. And I said, "Well, I don't know, should I go over and say I'm a Watford fan?" And Judy was like, "Really? really? I was like, yeah, no, I'm going to. And I went over and I definitely stood to attention. I definitely, you know, shook his hand and he said, well, I'm hoping we can bring the glory days back. And I just remember the hairs on the back of my neck standing up. So it was really fantastic to read that book. And it's beautifully written, by the way. It was very easy to read. It flowed so well. And all the reminiscences of the players and their memories and all the some of the crazy things that happened. The goalkeeping incident, of course, is probably the main one. Pulling a bloke out of a restaurant, you know, in was it Plymouth, and dragging him to play in a semi-final. I mean, it's nuts, right?
Yeah.
But there were things. Obviously, he wasn't perfect, Graham, and Lionel's very good on that. He's very good at sort of highlighting maybe some of the errors that were made. But overall, it's such a brilliant book. And if you're young and you didn't live through that era, you hear people my age banging on about it, or people your age, John, because you were a junior Hornet at the time. But if you're in your mid 20s, it's just such a brilliant read. It's like it's the history of your club in between the covers, and you can read it and think, my gosh, I wish I'd been there for that 8-1, or I wish I'd gone to Kaiserslautern. But it's such a brilliant record, and we're really glad. We should be really pleased to have that as a record of those years. And Lionel's done a fantastic job, and it was a real honour reading it.
Yeah. So if you haven't listened to it yet, it's a free podcast you can listen to. Look up "Enjoy the Game," Watford FC, wherever you get your podcasts, and you can hear Colin reading the wonderful book. Because you can get a copy of it, I think, if you go on eBay or somewhere. Maybe someone's got it and they can loan it to you. But yeah, you can listen to the whole 26 chapters now wherever you get your podcasts. Tuesday, Norwich at home. Feels similar in a sense that, you know, they're a big club and recently Premier League side, not quite as recent as Leicester. Any changes, apart from, of course, goalkeeper? Any other major changes you think he's going to make?
So didn't he play the week before the
Hamer
against Rotherham?
Yeah. So Hamer being goal, yeah.
He's had a game, so he should be like, yeah, I bet he was. I mean, I don't know how goalkeepers will say, oh no, we're part of a, you know, we all support each other. But when he gets sent off, he must be thinking, oh God, I'm going to play against Norwich. He must be thinking that. He must do a little jig as he goes back to the team coach. Who knows? Maybe not. Maybe, you know, it's a difficult game, but they've got their problems. You know, did they not come down with us in the same season?
Yeah, they've had two, yeah.
They didn't get back up last season, nor did we. And I think there's some, you know, like all clubs that drop down, there are financial issues, huge wage bill needs to be cut and so on. So I don't think they're in great shape. They haven't had a brilliant start to the season like Leeds and Leicester and Ipswich and Middlesbrough. So I'd say rinse and repeat. Bring Kone back in, put Loser on the bench, and I might start Bio. I might.
Yeah, okay.
Because he's such a nuisance. He's very good at pressing. And at home, I think that can be an advantage because they're going to be, like all away teams, probably a little more cautious than they would be if we were playing them up at Carrow Road. So get in their faces, you know, get into their half, and try and, you know, and score some goals. I mean, you know, that is I know we put 5 past Rotherham. My friend said it was the worst 5-0 win he'd ever seen, which I think is not fair, actually. I thought we were good in large sections of that game. But, you know, scoring goals is not easy for us. I'll tell you one thing that's starting to annoy me. Can I just say this?
Go on then.
Martins is right-footed. He's so right-footed. He cannot kick it with his left foot. Or rather, he never does. He came on yesterday, and there's a couple of occasions when he gets past the defender, and you think, whip it in with your left foot, Mateus. But he cuts back, and he wants to play it on his right foot. And everyone in the league knows that.
Yeah.
So why don't you give him a go on the other side of the pitch and see if he can whip a ball in and put him on his stronger side? It seems kind of stubborn to keep playing him down the left when he has, you know, even Semmer, who is very left-footed, he can occasionally, when the defender thinks, oh, he's going to try and get by me, he's going to try and use his shoulder to get by me, he's going to cross it with his left foot, even he can sometimes cut back and hit it with his right foot, and sometimes successfully. Martins cannot or will not hit you with his left foot, and it is starting to annoy me.
Okay, well, let's see if he takes some coaching tips from you, Colin, and has a bit of extra practice on his other foot to see what happens on Tuesday.
Unlikely.
Thank you so much for your time, Colin.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And
always a pleasure, John.
Let's see what happens. We might be back with another mini podcast after the game on Tuesday.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, well, if it's boring, then it's not worth talking about. But we'll be back next weekend, where if anybody has already sent in their stories of their away days, we'll add that to next weekend's podcast. I had lots of people send in audio messages, which are fantastic, to tell their stories of their crazy, interesting away days, because we were on a big away trip to Hull. Not the longest, but one of the longest. And we're back, of course, very, very soon with From the Rook End. Do tell your friends. And come on, you uns!